What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. This is In Liberty and Health. I have been very much so looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. I know this gentleman helps quite a few of the guy in the red, or the guys, apologies, in the red pill sphere out, hosting the studio and doing lots of cool work outside there, and also talking a lot about religion, which has been a growing interest of mine as a agnostic person who's kind of exploring some of this a little bit outside of my usual scope. So make sure you hit all the links below to find where you can find my guests, find myself, and also get the world's best electrolytes and supplements right there. Tiger Fitness is running an awesome sale, the 8 days of gains, I think it's called, and they got a ton of free stuff as they always do when they do their sales. So make sure you go hit the links below so that way you can support the brands and support you. And without further ado, let's rock and roll.
What is up, everybody? My name is Kyle Matovic. I am the host of the In Liberty and Health podcast, where we talk all things liberty, health and wellness, and beyond. My hope is to encourage and spread the message of liberty and physical and mental well-being. I hope you enjoy all the topics we talk about with our guests. We're on all major streaming platforms, so please sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Man, I'm doing as good as anyone can do getting buried by his 13-year-old son on leg day.
I'm not going to apologize for not being on this podcast because I got to go see Metallica. So if that's a problem, kiss my ass.
Okay? I am.
All right.
All right, everybody, I would like to welcome Mr. Glenn, or as he's more well-known as, Mr. Trent Lawrence, to the show. How you doing, dude?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. I hit a new PR on the bench, which I'm feeling like I can get to that 315, 295 for me today, but I'm feeling nice. Pretty good about that 215.
Nice.
Or 315.
Yeah, like I tell everybody, like my goal has always been to bench what other people squat. You know? Like, oh, you squat 405? That's cute. I bench that. You know, like that's just kind of been my goal. But I also like to do that with all my lifts. Like whatever you think you could do, my goal is to try to do it way more. And not like, it's not like a pride thing. Like I guess a challenge thing for me, because I say like, oh, this guy could do it. I should be able to do it. And if I should be able to do that, I should be able to do more than that, you know? So yeah, 315 is not an easy thing, dude. Because like once you get there, it's kind of the putting on more weight after that is a lot easier. But I remember getting to that point where I could do a clean rep of 315. I mean, that was a huge day for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember my first 500-pound deadlift, and I damn near broke out into song and dance at the gym. That was a pretty big day for me. I'm pretty sure I was probably in the 190s, and right now I'm a little over 200. So I'm definitely working on it. But right now,
definitely we're doing over 2 times your body weight with your dead. Mm-hmm. And your bench is definitely over 1.5. So dude, you are in the top 5 percentile of physically fit men.
Well, you know what? I was on our mutual friend Nuclear Cadillo's show last night, and I think we were kind of talking about how easy it is to be above average. And I think you probably see this too. And you're like way, 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 way above average when it comes to this strength training stuff. But for like guys to not be average nowadays, it's so easy. Like you just have to go to the gym for like 6 months consistently and eat like a reasonable amount of protein and you'll be fine. But like there's so many guys that aren't just willing to do that and they're, you know, going to accept the struggles that they got. Maybe they'll max out in other areas. But like if you just do that, just train yourself for 6 months, you could easily get to, you know, 1.5 times your body weight, pretty much all your lifts other than maybe your bench. But like all that should be pretty easy and you'll be pretty happy at that.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it is, the metrics for considered to be a physically fit man is you have to, I think you bench 1.5 or 1.25 your body weight, be able to squat 1.75 and like deadlift like 2.0 your body weight, mm-hmm. right? And these are just like basic, you know, standards for guys to like achieve or pursue. Because, you know, if you're 200, you know you're going to be at least be able to bench 200 pounds, right?
Right.
So that's basically zero. So can you bench at least 150 more? It would be my goal, right? Like if I was 200 and just work towards that, because that would be the working goal. And it's not a short journey. It's not going to be like, hey, you're going to be able to achieve this in like in a year or something. Just don't put a time limit on achieving it, you know? And you're right. It's so easy. The bar set so low, you know, for guys these days, like, if you could just do the basic shit, you're better than 70% of the guys out there physically. So, I mean, it's not hard anymore. And there's so much knowledge on how to do it. And there's so many different diets and all these different like workout regimens and theories that it's not like it's a secret anymore. You could get everything on Google for free or YouTube for free if you really wanted to. So there's no excuse for guys these days.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I remember watching Elliot Hall's videos back in like 2014, maybe even a little bit earlier than that, and eventually found CT Fletcher, and that was like my main inspiration. I'm like, oh, this dude was dead like three times, and he became, you know, a bench press champion, and you know, had 19 inch arms naturally, and you mm-hmm. know, you could debate whether or not he was natural or not, but regardless, like the motivation was out there for me, you know, almost 10 years ago to start training. And that was all I needed to just get my ass going. And really, I think that transferred over into a lot of different areas in my life where I was a lot more confident. And I'm sure you probably experienced the same thing. You were also in the military at one point as well. So I'm sure that probably helped as well.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in the military, I was very active. My job required me to be very physically fit. But I got out with an injury. So when I got out of the military and being injured and having to work through my injury, I was kind of laid up for a really long time. And because I got out earlier than my desired goal, because I wanted to do 20 years, right? I wanted to make it to retirement. And because of the injury, I ended up getting out on a medical discharge, the honorable discharge, but under medical conditions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was like dealing with my depression and not being able to be really physically fit because of this injury and, you know, having to go through therapy and all that stuff. I gained a lot of weight. I went from being about 185 pounds when I got out of the Air Force to 285 pounds 2 years later, right? Mm-hmm. Just being depressed and not being able to be that active, doing the therapy stuff. And I remember like running up the stairs, chasing my son. And it was just like a 12 stairs, right? And I was winded. I felt like I was gonna die. And it was then I'm like, no, I gotta change this. I gotta change this real quick. And I started just setting small goals for myself. And you know, I was living in LA at the time, so I would have the pleasure of going to the Long Beach gym called Metroflex, where CT Fletcher is known. And my brother at that time, my younger brother, who was really big into like the amateur bodybuilding scene, but he never competed, but he just liked the training aspect of it. So I kind of, you know, enlisted him as my trainer and kind of got me in the, got me training how to train properly. Because in the military, you're working out to be physically fit for duty, not necessarily putting on a whole lot of mass or developing muscles. You're more doing it for agility, keeping your skills sharp, you know, being able to, your endurance level up, you know, but not training for growing muscles. So, you know, it took me like 2 years from after the time I got out of the military to drop all that weight back down. And I got down to like 240. And I said, you know what? I want to compete in bodybuilding. And I had a friend that actually was competing at that time. And he was like, bro, I'll be honest with you. You're never going to get on stage. I said, okay, cool. And that was all I needed for him to say. Because the next year, I got on stage, and I placed last in my first show, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't do well at all, but I did better than I started. I looked better than I started off as, right?
Sure.
And so the next year, I decided to compete again in a different class, because this is when they first opened the classic physique division in bodybuilding. And he was actually competing in classic physique, and we're about the same height, so we were in the same class. Gotcha. And then I beat him. And this guy's been doing it for like 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And then I beat him every other time we were actually in the same show from that point on until I stopped competing. He no longer became my friend like after like the second show. Mm-hmm. But I tell me I can't do something. Watch me exceed the limit. Hold my beer. Mm-hmm. Hold my beer. You know, and you're right. When you said that you took the what you learned from physical fitness and training and you applied it to other areas of your life, I did the same thing. You know, after, you know, winning that first competition, I decided, you know what? I want to go to college. Right. And at this point, I was 30 years old and I owned a barbershop. And I was a trainer at the naval base for, you know, I was a personal trainer at the naval base. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I want to go to college. And the only reason why I wanted to go to college was because I was told that I was stupid growing up. Like my mom would tell me, you're dumb. You're an ADD retard. You know, like that was her shit talking. And I just wanted to prove to myself that I actually am not stupid. So I took the same principles that I learned in competing in that same discipline, that same regimen, right? The same process. And I applied it to my academics. And I end up going to school for religion, being a 4.0 student the entire time, then graduating with a degree in divinity. And I'm just like, yo, I'm not even going to be a pastor, but I just still did it. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. You could take the things that you learn and disciplines that you learn from fitness and literally apply it to any other area of your life and you will see tremendous success.
Yeah, it's it kind of reminds me of the David Goggins thing, and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm going to talk about, the 40% rule, or you know, whenever mm-hmm. you're going through it, you just think about all the hateful shit that people have said to you, or you know, the shitty tweets, comments, whatever have been left at you, and then there's another rep, the next comment, there's another rep. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I always think. And I've had people on my Twitter, I was doing a trap bar deadlift there for a little bit because I messed up my back conventional deadlifting because I had terrible form, and I think I was doing like 530 pounds or something like that. Nice. And someone's like, oh, you're using a trap bar, or like, oh, that's not real deadlifting. I'm like, all right, where's your receipts? Do it. Mm-hmm. That's my post every single time, because once again, the people who are usually saying that usually have never held 500 pounds in their hand. They yeah. haven't felt 400 pounds on their back. They haven't felt 300 pounds on their chest. They have not felt that weight on them, because if they did, they would shut the fuck up and say, dude, you keep going. All right. Yeah, and that's what I'm all about.
I get to the point where like, I don't care if I'm using straps now when I do deadlift. Yeah. I don't want to hurt my wrist anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and it helps me, you know, I don't have to focus about my grip so much. I get to focus on my form and getting the weight up. I'm not a power lifter. Mm-hmm. I'm not competing as a power lifter. So I don't really care if I'm not doing it with, you know, conventionally or the way that real power lifters do it. I'm still getting this fucking weight up. and I'm still lifting more than you are over there, right? And it's like, I just don't care. You get to the point where you just stop caring what other, just stop caring what other people think, especially in the gym, because it's all, I'm not there for them. I'm there for getting my goals, and I can give a shit what, care less what you're doing, you know? But you're right. You know, the people do like to just talk shit and try to discredit what you do. And it's out of jealousy. Right. It's really out of jealousy. I mean, you get that in anywhere, right? When I started getting in the film industry and I was like excited for the little background roles that I got, you know, people were like, dude, you're just a background actor. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Nobody even sees you. I'm like, yeah, but I got to be on that set. You know, like people are always going to throw shade.
Yeah. So what was it like working in the film industry? I'm glad that you brought that up because I kind of wanted to ask you about that because I typed your name into Google to find a picture for the thumbnail. And I seen you come up on, you know, IMDb, which, you know, they have for like everybody, but like normally I would assume that like, if you're on there, then you've probably done some notable roles. And I've been following you now for probably, I want to say 6 to 8 months or so. And I've enjoyed your content, your stuff with Thor, obviously the stuff at Red Bone Studios and all that. Did that kind of give you a little bit more insight when it came to Red Pill awareness? Or, you know, what was that like? Because, I mean, you have such a diverse background, and it's people like you are just absolutely fascinating to me.
Well, the crazy thing is I got into the industry, the film industry, basically on a whim. Mm-hmm. Back in 2018, I ended up getting injured working at a correction facility. I was a CO, corrections officer, and I needed certain knee surgery. And the knee surgery, you know, kind of went bad. They were supposed to remove my meniscus, but they repaired it. And that means it took me out of work for a lot longer. And then during the rehab, they ended up having to go back in there and redo the surgery because they messed it up. So then it just ended up made me ineligible to go back to that field of work. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, back in California, I was just starting a podcast. I just started a podcast called The Truth Is, and I'm really just, you know, calling out a bunch of BS, right? And somebody that was listening to me emails me and says, hey, I love your voice. Would you be interested in doing a voiceover for my student film project? And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. Like, what do I got to do? Like, you know, do I do it on the computer? Like, I'm just learning how to podcast, so I didn't even know what I'm doing. And he's like, no, you'll come to the UCLA studio over here and we'll pay you. I'm like, really? Cool. So I went and did that. And at that time, I was going through a divorce. So it was kind of just like a fresh start for me anyways, being back in LA and just trying to figure things out. I already got injured, recovering from the job injury. You know, the wife and I divorced, and that ended horribly. And that's kind of where at that time doing the podcasting and doing the voice acting, I started listening to Red Pill stuff. I just started looking to find answers for my own problems. Like, I really wanted to know what I did wrong for this to happen, right? And that's when I came across, you know, Rich and Rolo's work, and just kind of started following them and listening to them. And so I was learning my Red Pill awareness as I was getting in the film industry. And from that one voiceover job, I ended up getting asked to do a couple other student films, and, you know, small, you know, roles, little small speaking roles. But since they're student films, there were nothing really prominent. Like, they will go to some of the film festivals, but, you know, nothing would ever really, you know, transpire out of it. Like, it never really, like, shot up my career. And I got into doing a whole bunch of music videos from there after that. And I got casted on the film Tenet as a background actor. And, you know, end up getting asked to do some hand-to-hand, you know, scenes because I had the experience. And so just kind of getting to know everybody and just kind of making those connections on a whim, basically by luck, I kind of fell into it. And I've been in 5 films now. Either I'm credited as, you know, I have a one lead role, a film that I'm in, a movie called Token Choke Dispensary that's coming out this year.
Okay.
Where I'm the top biller and the lead character, and I play a crooked DEA agent robbing pot shops in Los Angeles. And so I did that, and then I started getting into more production because 2020 happened. And if you were not prominent or you weren't a well-reputable name or if you didn't have your SAG card yet, you were not going to be getting work. So I wanted to learn the production side of that time.
Yeah.
And I made friends with guys that are doing, you know, film crew stuff and, you know, worked on all their, you know, personal projects during the whole lockdown and started learning how to work the camera and started making my own stuff and, you know, started doing all that during the whole lockdown, which people end up seeing my editing work. They end up seeing some of the stuff I created, and I would get production work or getting asked to be on production teams as well as, you know, small little feature roles. So just, that's just kind of how that ended up happening. And, but then as my YouTube presence started growing more and my, you know, the post on Instagram and stuff, I started losing jobs in the film industry. Mm-hmm. And because of what I was saying, because of my opinions or my YouTube topics, people didn't really want to work with me as much. Because I'm not at that level yet where I got enough like cred or I got enough, you know, leverage to like I can say dumb shit and get away with it.
Right.
Like I'm known pretty decently, like within the in crowd, but I'm not known well enough to where I can make dumb decisions or I can, you know, get away with stuff. So, you know, that made me want to focus more on all podcasting.
Gotcha.
And that's when, you know, I decided, you know, I really wanted to work with Rolo and the guys in Vegas and open up that podcasting studio because I knew how to do the production side. The learning the production side from 2018 all the way until now, and working on so many projects, I was able to bring in a skill set that they weren't familiar with and, you know, to be able to bring out the studio and make the studio come alive. And that's what I wanted to do and, you know, made that move to Vegas to do it.
Hell yeah. I want to give a shout out real quick. Like I told you earlier, Nuke dropped by in the chat. Appreciate you dropping by. And Christianity Unplugged, appreciate you two guys dropping by. It's kind of interesting. The story that you told there is basically like you came on to provide value to people who you thought were valuable, and then in turn you fostered a relationship with those kind of people. This kind of goes back to, you know, developing yourself and kind of, I think, even like a red pill concept of, you know, keeping yourself as your mental point of origin, which is something that I think a lot of guys tend to lack because they always think that they have to do for other people, right? And I guess one other thing that I kind of want to dive into you with a little bit, if you're comfortable with it, is your divorce, because I think a lot of guys who particularly get married, especially some of the guys that I'm kind of hanging out with. I have a lot of friends that are like Orthodox Christians or like very traditionally minded. I think they see the model of marriage and I understand, and they think it's like a really good deal. Like, this is what you should do. You know, the Jordan Peterson message is very, very appealing. Understandably so. I was very, very attracted to that at one point as well. And I think that they think it's going to be like a seamless ride from here to there. But someone like you in your situation, you probably, you know, thought along the same lines, especially coming from a very religious background, that, you know, you did all the right things. You were a good provider. You were a good husband and all this, but things didn't work out. So what do people ask? They always ask, well, what did I do wrong? Or at least guys typically do. Women typically don't. But like, I don't want my guys, you know, the guys that I'm friends with that are 18, 19, 20, who are just trying to do everything right, lead themselves into like this narcissistic fantasy that can't manifest in reality, not because of anything that they did, but because like we don't live in that world anymore. So I guess the kind of question here is, what was that like for you?
It was really it was a very difficult process, because as well as working at the corrections facility in Washington, I was also the youth pastor at my church. So I was on staff, and you know, when I found out about the three affairs, I found out about all three affairs all at once, you know. And when I found out about them, and I approached my pastor about it, and kind of just let him know what's going on. I'm struggling here. I don't know, what should I'm freaking out, right? And you know, the first thing that he, you know, kind of came at me with was like, well, what did you do wrong? Right? And I was just like, wait, what? He goes, well, when the wife is doing something this egregious, I have to go to the husband and see what he did wrong for her to do this behavior. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of at that moment I realized, wait a minute, you're focused on not the fact that I just found out that she's cheated on me three times, and we've been married for 13 years, and that we have a child together, and this relationship seems, she wants it obviously to end. I definitely don't want to be with somebody that's cheated on me three times, right? And like, you're concerned about what I did wrong? I don't know where to begin here. Like, I'm trying to get some guidance here. Like, help me, you know? And it kind of came off as more like what she did was wrong, but she wouldn't have done anything wrong if I met all her needs. If I was just a good servant leader, if I was just the best right. servant leader possible, then she would have no reason to have done that. And he asked me if I was willing to forgive her and try to reconcile. And I said, I could forgive her, but I'm not reconciling. And at that point, he asked me to step down from leadership. And he ended up putting her as a fill-in for me until they found the replacement. And so at that point, I left the church, right? I left. And I was really zeroed out at that point. I said, man, yeah. I don't have the church to go to. I don't know where to turn. Right. And so what I would tell these guys that are wanting to get in relationships, I still am a huge advocate for marriage. Right. I think marriage is the best way for anyone wanting to have a family. Right. If you want to have kids, you know, you want their mom and dad living in the same household. Okay. That's better for the kids. You know, if you're thinking kids, right? If you're wanting to have children, you got to think about what's best for your children, right? And so I still advocate for marriage. I don't advocate for the way that we do it today. I don't encourage guys to get married with the state. I say, if you're a Christian, why are you getting married with the state? If you get married with the state, what you're saying is that you have more faith in the state to protect you if things go bad than you do in God. And typically, guys are not the ones that saying they want to get married with the state. It's typically the women. Right. So I tell guys, like, hey, if your girl saying that, hey, she wants to get married with the state, basically what she's saying is, hey, I want to get married with you, but I want this state marriage because they give me a safety net. Right. So it means that she has more faith in that than in you guys actually making it through. So I try not to, like, be that guy that's like, oh, never get married or can't trust any woman. You know, I'm the guy that says, hey, if you're going to go into it, you know, first prepare yourself. If you want to get married, then get a covenant marriage with your church. And if she is not up for that, then that kind of lets you know where she kind of stands. Mm-hmm. You know, if she is up for that, then great. Then you know that she's actually in it for, you know, for the real deal. Mm-hmm. But then I also tell guys, like, hey, if you end up wanting to get married with the state, get a prenup. There's nothing wrong with it. The state basically gives her a prenup and protects her. So you get a prenup and protect you. But I would tell guys definitely to make sure that if they get into something that serious, that they get into it knowing that they could lose everything and they have to be okay. You know? Have you ever seen the movie Heat?
I have not.
Okay, so it's with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Mm-hmm. And I think Robert De Niro, or one of the guys said, like, look, never get yourself into anything that you can't walk out in 30 seconds or less when the heat is around the corner. Basically meaning, like, don't get yourself into a situation that if you have to leave it for whatever reason, that it's going to destroy you. So if you're going to get married, make sure that you have enough resources to where that if you lose all that, you could start back up and rebuild, you know, because I just think that too many guys go into it with this fairy tale mindset and we end up getting zeroed out and we end up sputtering and we don't know what to do. And then we end up doing dumb things and taking, you know, and when we could have prepared properly for it. I don't think enough guys are preparing properly.
Yeah, well, you know, this is kind of where I think religion and red pill praxeology cross over very nicely. And some of the younger guys that I'm friends with that are very traditionally minded, they seem to reject red pill praxeology because they mostly see the Pearl, Fresh and Fit, and Andrew Tate. And not that like everything they say is bad, but they see, of course, the most obscene, ridiculous shit out there. So, of course, they're going to be turned away from it. But I'm like, look, this isn't about just, you know, take this white claw and get off my podcast, or let's make women look dumb for the sake of it. This is about information to make men's lives better. This isn't for women. This is for you. If you're a dude, you know, in some kind of relationship, or you're looking to, you know, become less socially awkward, this is for you. So that way you have more tools to make your life better. We're not going to tell you what to do, but we're going to tell you some tools or give you information to hopefully lead your life in a direction that you're going to find more fruitful for yourself. So like, I wish I could just tell these guys, like, look, I understand you're very traditionally minded, but like, just understand exactly what you said. Like, you have to be ready to completely rebuild yourself if things go south. And if you're not willing to accept that, then you might want to consider not getting married. You know, my wife and I have been together for 5 years. We just celebrated our year anniversary being married last month, but I mean, I knew what I was getting into.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I would, like, honestly, this is kind of where me and the red pill have a little beef at times, right? I'm very red pill aware. I understand the praxeology and I understand some of the tools that they give them and why they give guys these tools, right? But from a Christian worldview, I say a lot of these tools that they offer are not beneficial to a Christian wanting to uphold his religious beliefs, right? For example, Myron will say, like, hey, you need to bang 50 chicks before you decide to get married. Well, there's a few problems with that. One, that's a ridiculous number to have as an arbitrary standard, right? but then that would also make Rollo Tomasi not the guy, you know, he should have banged, what, I think 9 or 10 more chicks before he married his wife. Right. You know, he didn't reach that 40, you know, number or 50 number, right? So to have stuff like that out there, that is not beneficial to someone that wants to practice a Christian life, because, exactly, you know, practicing premarital sex is, you know, not good, is a sin in the Bible, right? So it's a sin to do these things. So I'm not going to tell guys to do anything that's going to cause them to sin. Now, I will tell guys, hey, yeah, you definitely want to spin plates. There's nothing wrong with spinning plates because you don't have to have sex with your plates.
Exactly.
I know that in Rollo's work and a lot of other guys, you know, say, like, promote, like, if she's not trying to put out, then, you know, next or whatever. I'm saying, hey, if you're a Christian guy, her putting out is not a big, that's something you don't want to happen right away, because you don't want to end up being caught up in that situation where you sin or whatever, right? So that aspect is not as important at that moment, but you could definitely spin plates. You could, you know, casually date 7-10 girls, how many girls you want, and just kind of vet them through the process without the sex. Yeah, it makes it a little bit more difficult. It makes it, you know, you have to now adjust how you're going to see genuine desire at times, but it can be done, right? I'm also a big component that soft dread is okay in certain aspects. Keeping right. yourself physically fit and attractive, that's passive dread, right?
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. That, you know, women are socially they forgot the term. It's like the social if your wife knows other women like you, social proof, right? Women operate.
Oh, yes, people, yes.
Right? So, you know, keeping yourself physically fit and attractive mm-hmm. is a good thing. That's passive dread. Mm-hmm. So there's tools that the red pill offers guys that I think can be useful for guys that have faith. But what happens is they hear all the most extreme examples, or they will hear, you know, some of the most ridiculous advice tips, and they'll be like, I can't accept this. From where my belief system, I cannot practice this. Right. And I tell guys, no, look, I try to build a bridge on how Christian guys could utilize the red pill and it not jeopardize their faith or not cause them to do something that they would have to repent for, right? Because if you really think about it, the Bible really is the first red pill. But the Bible is really the first rational male, because the Bible is extremely patriarchal. It is very patriarchal, and it's very pro-masculine men. I mean, there's literally scriptures in the Bible that says, if you are an effeminate man, you don't inherit the kingdom of God. Basically, if you're an effeminate man, you're an abomination, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it literally tells guys that you got to be a man, that you have to be that guy, right? But the way that it's being taught and preached about in these modern day evangelical churches, they're giving you a horrible, warped version of the Bible.
Right.
It's very soft. It's very feminine. It's very, to me, I say it's very anti-God. I said it's literally the definition of anti-Christ, the way that they're doing this. And unfortunately for me, I was one of those guys that was doing it too until I had my divorce. And so what I like to do now is I really try to like to help those that are in faith to be able to reconcile the way that the red pill can benefit them, and show them that it's not all the Andrew Tates or the Fresh and Fits and all the Access Vegas stuff. I try to show them, no, there's other aspects to it to where that you can actually utilize it.
Yeah, and I really like what you said, bringing up spinning plates. And this is why I've told a lot of guys, like, as you start to date more and more women, you don't necessarily have to sleep with them, just like you said. But it's like the fact that you're just gaining social confidence, right? You're comfortable around these kind of people. You're comfortable being around attractive women. You know how to interact with people in general. And it's not just women. It's, once again, people in general.
Yeah.
That's going to make you a more desirable person and going to make you, you know, all around a better person to be around. Like I said, this stuff's not just about picking up women. It's also about, you know, let's not get taken advantage of. How can you be a more charming person in general? I was on a podcast, my friend Tommy, he runs the Year Zero podcast, and he had two other Orthodox Christians come on. And I remember my one friend, Julie, she's awesome. And we kind of talked about some of the stuff before, but she's like, where's the part of the space that like teaches men to be confident and, you know, get them better social skills? I'm like, that's like a lot of the space, but you don't see that. And especially, you know, women don't like think about this kind of stuff when it comes to guys. Like they just manifest a dude right in front of them who's perfect for them, where that dude who manifested right in front of that woman had to do a lot of work. He was grinding his ass off in the gym. He woke up every day and, you know, didn't miss a meal, or, you know, had his calories just right, had his macros on point, skipped going out and went to bed early. That guy grinded to be the guy that you see in front of you now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what this space can do for people. If you listen to the right people, you know, and you become a confident and competent person, you know, by just trying to improve yourself. That's what I think a lot, that's what the spirit's always been for me.
What the problem with this space is that unfortunately, everybody's trying to stay relevant or beat or make the next trending top thing, right? Mm-hmm. They're always trying to one up the other person.
Yeah.
And in the and that's the problem. That's the process of trying to stay relevant, right? That's the hustle of trying to stay relevant and to be influential or to be able to have a presence.
Yeah.
And what tends to happen when we focus on that is that we tend to divert our messages or our topics, our conversations, and we start, you know, going down a road to where it's all about the most red meat, triggering, most craziest, you know, situations out there. And it's really entertaining, but there's not enough actionable advice for guys to take away from. You know, I have guys that have issues with their relationship and they don't care about what's going on with Destiny and his wife. You know, I got guys that are struggling with certain, you know, aspects of being able to reconcile red pill with their faith. They don't care what Andrew Tate's doing, or they don't care about, you know, Brittany Venti and wants to go after Rollo Tomasi. They don't care about that. They want, you know, advice, or they want to be pointed in the direction to fix their problems. And I think, you know, we're in that space right now at a time where it just kind of is very sensationalized. It's very like, you know, you have to have the next, you know, big sizzle, you know, you have to have the next big viral video. And that's the problem. And that's where we end up doing a disservice to the guys that actually need help.
Right. You
know,
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's hard to balance it. It really is hard because, you know, you're trying to get your presence out there. You're trying to grow your content. But at the same time, you got people that actually need some help here. Right. And, you know, the panel shows have, in my opinion, kind of have played out their usefulness. And I'm just kind of wondering what is going to be the next. What's on the next turn? You know, what's going to be the next thing? Because, you know, Fresh and Fit pioneered the panel shows and they did great when they did it. Everybody, man, they changed the game. But right. After 2 years, you're kind of like, it's the same old,
right?
And that's just their evening shows. I love their Money Mondays or their Womanizer Wednesdays and all the other things that they do during the day. I love those, but those don't get enough attention or those don't get enough attraction, right? Everybody wants to create all the after hour stuff. And then you got whatever podcast. Every time I watch them, like I appreciate their show, but I wonder, I'm not getting anything out of it. You're bringing on the most, you know, unmarriageable women. Yeah, they may be hot as hell or whatever. They may be freaks, but they are not of value. So we have all these different shows propping up the same kind of women that you, that we are telling guys to avoid.
Right.
And we are not really showcasing or propping up or presenting the contrast of that. Why don't we, you know, why aren't we highlighting women that are marriageable or not, that don't have many red flags, right? Like, why aren't we doing that in this space is what I'm wondering.
Yeah. Well,
because it doesn't sell.
Well, yeah, it doesn't get the eyes. Yeah, like I was telling Nuke last night with my wife, if you go to her Twitter, there's no posts other than maybe a couple replies to people. If she posts on Facebook, it's usually of, you know, me and her or our dogs or something like that. Like, she is very, very, I don't want to say conservative, but like, she just does, she's not out there clowning people. She's not acting a fool on Twitter. But, you know, once again, if I asked her to, I've told her, like, hey, if you ever want to stop in on a show or something like that, say hi to somebody, she doesn't want to. So, you know, that's the unfortunate, like, other side of that. And obviously I know that you know that as well, but like, you know, yeah, for people always wondering that, it's like, well, you know, these women are usually satisfied with the life they got, they're happy, and you know, they want to put up with this stuff, and I don't fucking blame them for not wanting to get in, you know, to the clown car and run around trying to get eyes of everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I get it.
Yeah,
and but there are women out there that we should at least try to make an
absolutely
effort. We should try to make an effort to at least show a contrast. Like, if you're gonna have, like, you know, these very promiscuous women on, right? And you're showcasing all the red flags. At least find some other women that's opposite of them, that you could at least have the girls debate about what their views. Not so much you, not the guys debating the girls, have the girls debate and you facilitate it. And you can see the contrast and the difference between the type of women. And now you're kind of giving the guys, hey, not all women are like this, because that's the biggest problem that guys tell me. Like, man, it seems like all these panel shows have the same type of women, and it literally makes me think that all women are like this, right? Yeah.
Go outside, dude. Cut some grass.
Yeah, it's like, bro, they're really not all like this. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, a lot of young women today tend to, you know, fall victim to this type of mindset, but there's women out there in America today that are not like these women. Like, I know an actress, she's a friend of mine, she's 27 years old, she's a very beautiful woman, and she's still a virgin. Yeah, so no, and there are women like this. She's a Christian, I've known her for years. They're out there, but we don't highlight them enough, we don't talk about them enough. So I could see why guys kind of get in this nihilistic, you know, view that there's nothing of value out there to try to settle down with, so why even do what I need to do to improve myself, right? Like, that's kind of like where they go to, or they get stuck in that whole red pill rage stage where all they want to do is yell and you know, pay ridiculous amount of money just to tell these women that they're 304s, but at the same time they're going to subscribe to their OnlyFans.
Yes.
It just kind of seems like these shows are kind of propping up these women, and these women are able to make money off of being featured on their show. I just think that's just kind of ass backwards.
Yeah, it's like a whole economy in and of itself at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, so I'm in rural southwestern Pennsylvania, and, like, I just found out a couple weeks ago a girl I used to spend some time with, and not that her and I ever hooked up or anything like that, but, I mean, like, her family brought their cars to my dad's shop to be repaired, and I found out she had an OnlyFans. I'm like, holy shit. So this shit is everywhere, but at the same time, in my early 20s, there are plenty of girls that I had as a plate that, like, were dating, maybe even marriage material, that I just, you know, spun as a plate for a little bit, stopped talking to him, maybe a couple months later hit him up again. Like, they're out there, but, you know, if you're seeing all these crazy women, one, a woman that actually wants to be with you will eventually kind of mold her life to fit into your life. If she really wants to be there, right? These women that you see that are wild and crazy, you kind of have to accept that there's going to be some women that are just like that, and they're not for you. Or if they are, the recreational use only. Like maybe just get some social experience with them. You know, if you're into spinning plates and sleeping with them, okay, do that. Yeah. But like understand that they're not going to be the ones that you take home to your mom and then have a family with, or at least not a majority of the time. The ones that you do want to do that with, you'll know. You will more than likely know. It'll be a plate that, you know, I mean, I've had this situation plenty of times where I leave my house after they stayed over and then I wake up, I come home after working all day and my entire house is spotless. Women who like go out of their way to do stuff like that for you, think about that. And then if you continue to see that, okay, well, it's not only an indicator of interest, but also lets you know that she gives a fuck. Like, just signs like that.
Is that guys need to, well, what guys are so focused on is like, she touched my pee-pee. Right. She's wifey. Like that. That's how low the bar is for guys. Mm-hmm. Like, she touched my pee-pee. She's pretty. That's wifey. And, you know, Maybe I'm wrong in this thinking, but the way I look at it is like not every chick that I come across, no matter how hot she is worth my legacy. And my legacy comes from what comes out when I bust a nut, right? So it's like not every girl is worth my dick. So if that mindset kind of keeps me expecting more of women, like there's a higher standard, there's a higher threshold than, oh, she touched my pee-pee. Right. And I think guys need to develop that for themselves. But it's hard to do that when you are just trying to get some. Right. So guys don't have a standard. Right. Guys will bang the biggest, ugliest heifer out there. And
yes,
they have no standard. Mm-hmm. I'm like shallow. How I am so shallow that I couldn't do it. I couldn't even rise to the occasion. Right. You know, I think guys need to kind of have more pride in themselves in that matter.
Sure.
Not every chick is worth your dick. And when you have that and you decide to like develop what expectations you want for the chick that you are willing to risk impregnating, now you have that. Now you have opened up you are literally disqualifying so many women. And most women will disqualify themselves because they don't meet those standards, right? So I think guys got to realize they have to be more than just a cute, you know, pretty thing that wants, you know, that is open to having sex with you. Even if it's a casual thing, in my opinion, there just has to be more than that. Not saying that I haven't had one night stands in my past or that, you know, I've never played the field and, you know, hooked up around. Yeah, I did. But I'm telling you, through those scenarios and situations that have come out from them, I have realized that, yo, I don't want to deal with these headaches. I'm almost 40 years old. So, and I'm married. I'm just like, I would, even though I wouldn't have a horrible time if, you know, God forbid I was divorced, but just the thought of having to go back in the marketplace right now, I'm like, yo, I just don't want to deal with that headache. Right. You know, and I just tell guys, I look at most of these chicks, I'm like, these chicks are not worth my dick. These chicks are not worth me, you know, risking getting them pregnant and having my legacy. And I think guys need to kind of adopt that mentality more. And that would help improve their pool, right? Is once their standards are elevated, because women have the most ridiculous standards. They have six-figure income, six-pack abs, you know, all the 6'6"s, you know, like, And they get to have those standards, right? That's cool. Well, guys, we get to have standards too. And, you know, the standards have to be more than she touched her pee-pee and she's cute. Is she agreeable? Does she defer her authority to you? You know, is she eager to please you? Does she try to find ways to please you on her own? Like, these are things that guys need to look for in women that even you just want to hang out and be around,
right?
You know, and that's just kind of my opinion on it.
No, I think that's,
you can't hang out with strippers or anything. I have friends that are strippers too, you know, but that's a different arena. Like, those are not women that I would even consider worth my time in that aspect.
Right. Yeah. And I really like that perspective. I agree that some guys should, or that guys, not just some, but guys really should kind of have this idea that like a woman should have to qualify to you in some respect. And like, I think specifically guys who want to be more trad should kind of have that in mind, like, and guys should want to develop options for themselves so that way they can decline that and they don't feel so necessitous that they have to do this. But this also kind of pivots over into something that I kind of want to, maybe we can close on some of this, is like religion and being pro-life. So I consider myself pro-life as it gets, because I believe that, you know, we as rational beings are responsible for the actions that we choose to partake in. So every time you have sex, there's not a single adult on the planet that doesn't know what the potential consequence of that is. And anytime you engage in sex with somebody, you are understandably taking the risk to potentially bring a life out into the earth. When I hear people talk about the issue of pro-life versus pro-choice, they never seem to come at it from that angle, which has always been really interesting to me, because like, to me, that's like the most fundamental thing. Like, you were consensually agreeing to enter and do this action with somebody that you know will or could result in a life. So like, if we're doing that, shouldn't we place a lot of like, you know, value in that and be very, very smart and safe about that if we're going to engage in that?
Yeah. See, I've made a tweet maybe a couple months ago where I said, if TradCons were really serious about pro-life, then they would be willing to prosecute the mothers for murder.
Right.
I said, until they are willing to do that, the trad cons are just, you know, virtue signaling. They're not serious about it. And because if you look at the statistics, why most women are getting abortions, it's not because they were raped. It's not because of an essay. It's not because of incest or anything like that. It's because they don't want to face the consequences of their actions, and they don't want their life to have to change because they weren't being responsible, right? So it's a get out of jail free card, and it's a way for them to avoid being accountable. Mm-hmm. Well, we hold men accountable. Hey guys, if you get this chick pregnant and she decides to keep the kid, you're on the hook for 18 years, right? So that's the accountability that you have to face. That's the consequence of your action. And men are like, okay, we accept that. We understand that's the risk that we take. What society has done, and even in the church, we have tried to avoid women or remove the accountability and consequences of women's actions, you know, to the point where we want men to have to pay for them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, what if we really want to fix relationships, we really want to fix families. Well, the first part we have to do is address the consequences on both parties. Both parties need to be held accountable for their actions. And as long as we are going to be allowing abortions, and, you know, as long as we're going to allow, because women are the only people, only beings on this earth that are allowed to contract a murder of a living being without having to go to jail for it.
Yes.
You know, and get the say, well, it's because it's the best interest of the mother. Well, you know what? What if we decided to take that same process and be like, well, you know, we should get rid of all the homeless people, because that would be in the best interest of the country. Let's just go around and start killing them, you know? Or at what point is it okay to abort your child? I mean, now they're doing it in California, I believe, up to like a month or two after the birth or whatever, like you could still, or days or something like that. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Ridiculous. What's next? Can I, you know, go shoot this 18-year-old punk and be like, hey, I aborted him, because he's a degenerate, you know? When is it going to stop? It's not going to stop until the trad cons and the people in the church really start cracking down on female sins and holding women accountable for their sins and what they do wrong. And until they start shaming women and really start putting women's feet to the fire, then no, things are not going to change. It's all virtue signaling. As much as you are pro-choice and you want to go out there and promote it, as do I, it's not going to change unless something significantly, you know, changes the way things are done. Until there's a consequence or some action that alters our culture to shift, you know, because all it is now is just virtue signaling. Right. You know, yeah, we send it back. We send the abortion back to the states. Great. It's just virtue signaling.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I understand why they don't want to touch that, because when you start touching women believe is their right, which I don't believe it's actually right to murder another human being, but this is like the cultural understanding is that, hey, this is your bodily autonomy that's on the ballot. You're talking to a majority of the electorate who holds a majority of the debt and who sincerely believe that part of their bodily autonomy is on the ballot. So like, there is political suicide to be had when you go after this issue, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. That means that you should be good.
I don't understand how doctors get away with it, because I mean, right. It's the only thing. It's the only it literally breaks their Hippocratic oath or whatever it's called, right? Yes. They are to protect or try to preserve or save life, right?
Yeah.
They know that child in the womb is alive. It has a life. That's a life. There's a heartbeat. They know that it's growing. That is a life. Until they decide to start changing the terminology in the doctor's Hippocratic oath, I don't think they should be able to change the terminology of what is considered a valuable life or a life. Because I know they're saying like, well, if the child is out of the womb, can the baby, fend for itself? Well, no, right? So they're like, right. Well, then that's why it's considered, you know, able to be aborted or whatever. Until that is going to be the terminology in the Hippocratic Oath for doctors, I don't think that they could even hold that as an argument. What they should do is preserve life, or just say they're not willing to preserve life, but just don't virtue signal about it. Right. And I think for guys, like, hey, if you find out a girl had an abortion, that is a definite red flag.
Yes.
That means she will do whatever it takes, even kill a living being, to avoid having to be accountable. Mm-hmm. And that should be enough to be like, no, thank you.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, because that imagine being a guy who's excited to be a father and then you find out that like something like that happened. I mean, to me, that's traumatic.
I know somebody that went through that. It was rough for him. You know, it was rough. I remember we were in high school and he was a year older than me. And he, you know, knocked up his girlfriend and he was scared. And, you know, he got a job and, you know, he was doing everything he could do, you know, just kind of prepare himself. His dad was in the military, so his dad's not, you know, giving him any, you know, grace here. He was kicking his ass, making a man up. And when, you know, his girlfriend decided that she was going to have an abortion, after he had been preparing for this and, you know, getting shit together, he was distraught. He was like, man, at first I was scared, but I kind of started looking forward to it. I kind of started, you know, wondering what my kid was going to look like, and you know, I started thinking about things I wanted to do with him, you know, like it was difficult, and it sucks, because as a dad, as a father, you don't have a say so. I mean, if they're really about equal rights, then maybe what they should do is that, hey, that child in you is also part of me, so you technically should not be able to terminate something that's also me. You know, but yeah, I mean, it's an uphill battle with feminism and this whole abortion debate. But the problem with the tradcons is that in the evangelical church today, the reason why you're not going to see a big push or from tradcons against abortion is because the only place that feminism is thriving right now is in the modern day evangelical church. It is literally the safe haven for feminism. And I say that is because transgenderism has overtaken feminism in our culture, right? But the church will never accept transgenderism as a whole. You may have some very far left liberal, you know, denominations, but for the majority of the denominations, they would never accept transgenderism. So the only place that feminism can grow and still, you know, make an impact somehow is in the church. So since most trad cons are in the church community, they're not going to really go against abortion. Trad cons are just feminists that typically disagree on abortion. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
So I got to ask you, and like I said, maybe we'll close on this, is what kind of brought you to religion? Because you've always been religious. I'm agnostic, and like I said, I run in some Orthodox Christian circles, and I find that religion fascinating. If you can, you're willing to, what's your denomination, and what has always kind of kept you to that, never dissuaded you?
Oh, man, no, I definitely was swayed many times.
Okay.
I'm not a perfect guy or a perfect Christian at all. I'm by far the least perfect Christian. But I grew up in it. My stepdad was a gospel drummer, and my mom met my stepdad in church. And it kind of just, ever since I was like 3 years old, kind of grew up in it. And it kind of was like always a thing. But when I became an adult, I definitely kind of backslid and kind of just walked away from it. I was big into the hip hop scene and making music at that time, and, you know, doing the rap game at that time. It just, going to church wasn't cool. I wanted to be at the parties. I wanted to go open up at the shows and stuff like that, that I was doing. Like, it just wasn't my thing. And I remember, you know, just going through some difficult struggles. And just kind of really, after the being injured in the military and getting out and going through my depression, I was just like, you know, man, I need to, this is not working for me. This is something, I need to change here. And I remember a buddy of mine reached out to me, who kind of always stayed on the straight and narrow. And he just kind of said, give me some like encouraging words and stuff like that. It just kind of made me remember, oh yeah, I heard that before in the Bible, man. And by that time I was covered in tattoos, and anytime I would walk into a church, it just kind of pissed me off even more, because anytime I would try to go, the pastors would like all of a sudden want to change their sermon and talk about salvation, as if because I'm covered in tattoos, I must be a heathen and not know. So then that made me stop going, you know? And then one day I was at a park with my son, and I came up with this pastor and was doing this, you know, church picnic thing. And my son was playing at the playground, and, you know, he came over and started talking to me. And he's just doing small talk. And he invited me to his church. And I was wearing a hoodie like I'm wearing now. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to go. I was like, hey, do you have a problem with these? And I showed him my tattoos. Because typically thinking like, hey, as soon as I show my tattoos, they're kind of, it's a deterrent.
Well, skittish, yeah.
And he's like, no, actually, if you go to my church for 4 weeks, I will get a tattoo. And I was like, really? You'll get a tattoo? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay. So I decided to go to his church for 4 weeks just to prove that he was not going to get a tattoo.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I went 4 weeks, and he's like, all right, when am I going to get it? I'm like, oh, let's see if he's going to do it. So I called up my buddy, who's a tattoo artist, mm-hmm. had him come over to my house, and he gave the pastor a tattoo in my living room of his wife's name in like old English, like in a heart. Right. And I was like, oh, this guy seems pretty down there. It's pretty cool. He's not judging me. He actually followed through and got a tattoo. Let me give this guy a try. So that kind of, you know, brought me back to the faith, and, you know, just being around him and working with him gave me that desire to want to learn more than what I already knew. Oh. And I decided to go to school for religion, because I actually really wanted to know why everybody was fighting over a God. Like, why do people literally kill for this deity? Like, does he really need us to kill for him? He's God, right? And that kind of was my thing. And then when I came into this space, after leaving the church, I had a hard time reconciling it, like a lot of guys do. And it actually, listening to all these podcasts and, you know, reading Rollo's work, it caused me to actually read my Bible more, because I literally was trying to disprove the things that they were saying from a biblical standpoint, right? And all I end up seeing was ways that these actually, you know, align. Like the whole patriarchal system is actually biblical, and coming to realization that egalitarianism and complementarianism is really not biblical. And I don't know why these things are being preached in churches. It kind of really gave me this drive and this passion to actually start a podcast and start talking about these things that are going on, because the church literally does not give men any tools. It tells you be a better servant leader, but they can't even explain to you what that really means. And it, without it making it seem like you're just going to be a better slave for your wife. And they give guys no actionable advice, no help. And they just blame everything on them when things don't work out. And I'm like, these guys love God. These guys love their wives. They don't want to go down this road. And a lot of these guys don't want to be in this space as it is, but they just need help. And I'm just like, okay, I understand it, because I've been through it. And I want to be able to help build that bridge between religion and red pill, and, you know, work with guys that I may disagree with. Like, I've worked with Ruslan twice in the past month, and him, and if you watched any of my previous videos on him, I would go off on him. You know, I would literally trash him. But then after our conversations and after us getting into it, I realized there's more that we have in agreement than we disagree. And, you know, I'm like, these are the kind of conversations I want to have, especially for the guys in my demographic, because these are the conversations that they need. This is the help that they need. Not so much about the fresh and fit chicks or, you know, the Access Vegas girls. No, these are the conversations my audience wants to have. And I mean, that's just kind of where I'm passionate about. Just like, as much as I'm passionate about fitness, I'm really passionate about helping people, you know, improve the lives that they want to have. I want to help preserve marriages. I want to help preserve families. I don't want guys to go through any of the pain that I went through. And if I could help at least one guy not avoid what I went through, then I'm cool. I'm good. You know, and I think we all have our story, our own entry story to this space. A lot of people come in here through trauma, like I did. But a lot of people just get it, you know, just come through this space without the trauma. And that's great too, you know, but it's what you do with the information once you have it. Are you keeping it to yourself, or are you trying to give it away freely and give it out to the guys that may not have heard it yet?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I remember I was just watching the Ruslan debate, the latter half of it, right before we hopped on here. And it was kind of irritating, because it seemed like he wanted to debate Rollo again, but you're not Rollo. You are Glenn Lawrence, and you have a different perspective than him, and you even disagree with him on some stuff. And like, hey, let's focus on that. And, you know, once again, being an agnostic, I found that but you know, both you guys discussing religion and the way that you see a lot of this stuff, intersectional dynamics as a whole through a religious lens, was just absolutely fascinating to me. So, but like, conversations like that give me hope. And then when I get to talk to the Orthodox Christian guys and kind of tell them like, hey, this can be used for you too, that gives me hope. So I guess the last question I'll pose to you, other than your plugs and stuff, is what gives you hope about just everything in general?
Well, coming from a Christian worldview, right? I believe that we're going to see things get better, but they're going to get worse before they get better, right? So we already know that as a Christian, I already know that we already won, right? I already know that we won. Like, the devil's not going to win. Feminism's not going to win. The Bible clearly states that feminism will not win. It says in Genesis 3:16, your desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you. meaning regardless of what women are going to try to do to control men, at the end of the day, God will not allow that, and men will be maintain the position of authority. God will not allow his design and hierarchy that he created to be destroyed. So for me, that gives me hope. That's hope. But it's not hope that we're going to see it instantly. It's hope that if we do the work, if we are willing to work on ourselves and you know, improve our own ourselves first, and before we start trying to hold other people accountable, if we start willing to put in the work that we need to do, then we might be able to see a change, not for our lifetime, but maybe our grandchildren. Like sometimes we're just so focused on me, or right now. Like I have a 19-year-old son, a daughter, and an 18-year-old son. You know, I'm worried about that generation, and I'm also more worried about my future grandkids. I don't want, you know, this shit to be going on for my grandkids. What can I do to try to change culture or make an impact that might benefit them in the future? That's the kind of mindset that I think we don't have, you know, because we're so focused on ourselves. And so when I see guys that like you, and I see other guys in this space that are coming up that are eager to help other guys, that are not out here, you know, chasing the clout or not trying to be a grifter, you know, that are literally wanting to have conversations and try to give guys information or at least stimulate a conversation that may have guys think about things. That is hope, you know. And I think, you know, in the next few years, as like Rollo said earlier this year, we're not going to recognize the red pill. And that might actually be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, the growth and evolution of what may transpire after this election might be a better version of the red pill. Maybe the red pill are going to start having safeguards, because I've been saying the red pill needs to have gatekeepers, mm-hmm. you know, and start calling out people that are not aligned with this space, because these people are just making the space look bad, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe the next evolution of this space is going to be something better and something that's going to be able to benefit these guys more. And that's what I have hope for, especially when I see, you know, people that I don't really recognize come up and give out really good information, like your videos. And a couple other guys in like the Christian space, like there's guys that I listen to now that I probably would have never listened to before, but they're coming out very patriarchal. And what I tell people, yes, I understand the red pill and I'm very red pilled, but I am more biblical patriarchy. That's where I really stand. If I had to pick between red pill or biblical patriarchy, I align more with biblical patriarchy than I do red pill praxeology, because I can't condone or agree with all the tools that the red pill offers, but I could definitely agree with everything that biblical patriarchy offers. And what I tend to do and would like to tell guys is that the red pill tells you what is, and if you're a Christian, the Bible tells you what to do about what is, you know. And that's how I, you know, deal with it. And when I see guys like you and other young guys come up, I'm like, cool. We're making an impact, maybe little impact, but we're making the impact and we're moving things forward. And that's cool. And that's what gives me hope.
Nice, man. Yeah. Well, As always, I'm just a natural optimist. I really like your answer, and I completely agree. Even like all the guys who've been doing it for a while, their reach is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think like the show quality, thanks to someone like you, is improving as well. I think there's lots to be optimistic and lots to be happy about. You just got to dig for it. And if like your sincere efforts in yourself don't leave you, you know, more satisfied than you were before and a little bit more positive, or maybe a little bit more well off, then, you know, I hate to say it, but you got to put your nose to the grindstone a little bit more and realize that like a lot of life is going to be a grind, but that pays off. And, you know, you'll see that in more than just, you know, women. You'll see that in money. You'll see that in your career. You're going to see that in your hobbies. If you just, you know, keep putting in the work, keep putting in the time, keep putting in the hours. I mean, I've been doing this for a little over 2 years now, and it's been a slow burn, but, you know, I'd much rather be a slow burn and a slow rise than just, you know, it all comes and goes. I'd much rather have a loyal, you know, fan base or a loyal group of people that listen to me and take what I say seriously than, you know, all the eyes in the world, but nobody really cares about what I have to say, you know? And I think that's what's kind of going on with the Red Pill space.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, like, as much as like I'm friends with Zirka, I think that he's a very negative, he has a negative effect in the space, right? But I also think he misrepresents his faith very badly as well, you know? And I just like, bro, like, I'm your friend and I'm telling you, you need to shape up or ship out, because you're literally giving, you know, Catholicism a very bad rap. You know, you're supposed to be an ambassador for God and you're just making him look bad. But on top of that, you're making this men's help space, this red pill space, also look bad. And I have pride in that. I have pride in this space because this space has helped me, you know.
Exactly, me too.
And I have pride in my belief set. And I'm like, dude, if you're saying you worship the same God I do, and you're making him look bad, you're making me look bad. I have, you know, there's I have pride in that. And you know, I think what we're going to see is more guys like you, myself, you know, come up and actually hold the standard, be the standard bearer, you know, for this next wave and this next transition of the red pill, and be able to still collaborate and look up to those pioneers like Rollo and Ryan and Paul from Apex Mindset and George Bruno, like all these guys that have done this before us. We'll be able to still work with them and still be, you know, they'll still be our support and our driving force, but maybe this next edition of the Red Pill will be different, where it's going to be Kyle being the guy and because he has a different reach. And I love that. I support all that. You know, I just want to make sure that we start getting rid of all the riffraff and start getting back to actually giving guys what they need instead of what they want.
Right. Yeah, dude, I think that's a good message. Glenn, go ahead, do your plugs, brother. I really, really enjoyed this show, so we'll definitely have to do another one sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for having me on, Kyle. Really appreciate this opportunity. I really wish we could have made the first video, but I'm glad that we got to do it now. Like I say, I'm sorry I'm traveling, so I don't have my setup, so I hope the quality is still good.
Oh, dude, it was fine.
You guys can catch me at Glenn Lawrence Presents on YouTube for whatever videos I do. I do mainly Christian Red Pill stuff these days. You can also catch me on every once in a while on Rule Zero on Saturday, also on the Dragon Ship on Saturday. And on Sundays, I do a Saving Men Bible study or Saving Men Sermons. That's what the guys wanted to call it. So feel free to, you know, connect with me there. You can also connect with me on Twitter at Mr. Glenn Lawrence, or hit me up on Instagram at Glenn_Lawrence_presents. And I'm a pretty easy and going guy. If you reach out to me and ask me a question, I'll get back to you pretty quickly. Like, I'm pretty down to earth like that. So yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I really appreciate you hanging out for a bit. Like I said, we'll definitely have to do another one because I think this is an absolutely fascinating conversation. Everybody, thank you so much for hanging out in the chat and all that good stuff. Hit all the links below. Make sure you go subscribe to Glenn. I've really enjoyed his content. Specifically that debate with Ruslan, I thought that was absolutely fascinating, and I'm gonna have to listen to a little bit more, like the different sermons and stuff like that. But hell yeah, man, we'll definitely do this again sometime. Once again, everybody, thank you so much for listening and take care.
Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.